we're trying to find limitations, the most significant limitations. Let me use this analogy. So if you have an amazing car, whatever it can be, but your tire, little thing, your tire is not functioning properly, and that little thing, you cannot drive. So your engine might cost $300,000, but your a little thing just going to ruin all your experience and your car performance. So therefore, we structure and we build our testing diagnostics profiling in a certain way where we can identify the most significant limitations around your performance that can limit your performance in the octagon.
Welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast, where we talk with coaches and sports scientists to explore the latest in how performance monitoring is making a difference in the NCAA and pro sports alike. We're going to connect you with practical advice from the best in the business to help you take your athletes to the next level.
Roman Fumin is the Director of Sports Science at the Ultimate Fighting Championship. He's based at the UFC Apex, 130,000 square foot state-of-the-art production facility in Las Vegas that opened in 2019. Roman holds a PhD in physiology and more than 20 years working experience in sports science, technology, and performance. He's been with the UFC since 2018, and prior to that, he worked as the Director of Research and Science Innovations for Omega Wave and as a senior scientist for the Research Center of Sports Medicine in Moscow.
Hello, and welcome to the First Beat Sports Podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Roman Fumin, the Director of Sports Science at the Ultimate Fighting Championship Performance Institute, who has been a First Beat client since 2021. Roman, great to have you on. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello, Ben. I'm very happy and very glad to join you on this podcast and welcome everybody in this conversation. Hopefully, it will be valuable and useful for you guys.
Okay, so to get us started, give us a little bit of background of where you've been and how you ended up being the Director of Sports Science for UFC.
Yeah, it's a long story, but let's make it short. I moved to the United States in 2011, and I started working for Omega Wave almost from the beginning. So it was around 2012, and 6 years I was working for Omega Wave as the director of their research and innovations. And we did pretty good job building product, what is currently available, still available on the market around athletes' readiness assessment. And it was a very exciting time. But then back to 2017, I noticed on media, it has been posted that UFC is building UFC Performance Institute and they start hiring team. And I was like, oh, wow, UFC Performance Institute, sports science. So I was very excited. And so basically I submitted application because that on the position on the role director of sports science in 2017. And I got a call from our current VP performance, Dr. Duncan French. So I went through interview process and basically I beat all my competitors and this is how I get here. And since that time, I run sports science department over 5 years already.
Well, congratulations on the victory there and getting the job. At the Performance Institute, can you kind of break down a little bit what your role is? What department are you in and how many departments do you have there?
So our team has, I would say, like five core departments. So first of all, we are located in Las Vegas. Yeah, it's a part of our headquarters. Since 2017, we support a whole UFC roster, which is approximately around 650 athletes, UFC athletes.
Wow.
Okay. Exactly. On a daily basis, we all working with them, providing services in facility as well as remotely. Let's first focus on what we do in facility. So we have athlete development department. We have obviously sports science department, and I run this department. We have a strength and conditioning department, nutrition department, physical therapy / sports medicine department. So, and we are working on, as I would say, one team. So yes, we have multidisciplinary approach here, and we collect a lot of data building profiles around our athletes, making sure we are able to provide proper solution to them. However, everything is going to interdisciplinary solution. So as an example, if athlete would like to start his or her training camp, you know, fight is scheduled, this athlete would like to know where he or she is in terms of physical qualities, in terms of duration, what's the current state of the athlete. So then this athlete can come to the PI and let's say he's coming on Monday and we're going to schedule testing and assessments first with this athlete. And it will be nutrition assessment, body composition assessment, strength and power assessments, energy systems assessments, sports science assessment. So, and going through that week, we will be able to get important information around multiple physiological characteristics and physical qualities and weight management things and so on around this athlete. And on Friday, we all will sit together with the athlete and we're going to provide our not just results or key findings, but also conclusions and recommendations, what we want to highlight as a key priority for that fighter to work on with a high priority during this camp. After leaving UCPI on Friday, this athlete will have, and his team, obviously our team, will have a performance solution and recommendations from us, as well as continuous remote support for the following.
Okay, so it sounds like you've got a real schedule set up. I mean, it's a full week of assessments and I'm assuming training. One thing that caught my ear was, so you're doing body composition measurements. How are you using that? What machine are you using for body comp?
Yeah, we are using IDEXA machine for body composition analysis, as well as for more frequent assessments, we're using Sika bioimpedance analysis, if needed, so kind of both.
Okay. Well, that's nice. I mean, you've got the gold standard right there, number one with DEXA. So that's a beauty to have.
Yeah. I would like to mention we have over 50 different technologies in the PI and multiple different high level tools available for our team and for athletes to be able to get accurate and objective data and information during testing.
So you're using 50 different technologies. Okay, that's
over.
Over 50. That's a lot of technologies. Let me challenge you a little bit on this one then. So 50 different technologies. When is it too much? And I'm kind of asking in relation to like sports science really kind of went mainstream. Let's say when Chip Kelly was at University of Oregon with the football program, and then he took that kind of to the NFL with the Philadelphia Eagles. Things didn't work out there. I've spoken to staff at both Oregon and Philadelphia who kind of said it just ended up being too much. But you're doing a lot more than what they are, and it doesn't seem like it's too much. Kind of how do you balance this then, 50 different technologies?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my immediate response, automation is a proper solution for that. So the more we can automate and the less human will be involved in this process, the better. So therefore, our goal from day one was, hey, let's automate everything that is possible to automate. Let's collect data passively. Let's collect data without significant human impact. We're involving our expertise and human intelligence at the very end. So bringing expertise from different team members and building this interdisciplinary solution for the athletes around how to interpret data, how to build and develop proper training program and so on. So this is the right place for human expertise. But in terms of data collection and data management, yeah, we're using, I would say, different tools that can help us to manage this data efficiently and effectively. So as an example, for one of the technology, what I have to actually, definitely, I will say, so for example, we're using Oura Ring, right? Mm-hmm. So this technology can be used as a great example how passively we can collect data around athlete sleep, recovery, readiness, without bothering athletes much, how we can get this data from over 500 athletes, actually, at the moment. Yeah, we are getting this data automatically. We have internal system where we can review that data and flag some abnormalities and communicate with athletes immediately, trying to improve and manage and adjust their training load and so on. So we set up, I would say, pretty efficient system around data management in here. This is why this is possible to use multiple technologies, but not being overwhelmed, overloaded by data. And I'm using principle, if we can reduce complexity, this is the right way, and don't produce complexity without necessity. We don't want to add something if we're not getting benefits or value from this tool or this particular product. So we're always trying to minimize number of tools we're using. If we're still able to get valuable information, yeah, let's do it. Why we need to bring more tools. But if a particular tool, and I can say, mention Thursbit, obviously, can improve our processes around, for example, training load management, let's use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, even we have different heart rate monitors here in the facility. We have ordering. We have Omega Wave, but Thursbit can bring to us something unique, what we don't have. So, okay, let's include that tool in our current process, and we will get benefits. This process will be improved by this tool and approach.
So I think it's safe to say you guys are not gathering data to gather data on anything.
No.
Everything is used. If it's not used, that thing is out and you're on to the next thing.
Yep.
I agree with you with the outer ring. I have one. I know you wear one as well. That's the easiest, most non-invasive way to gather data.
Yep.
Something bothers me on my wrist. If I wear a ring, I don't realize that I'm getting all the sleep data that I need. So yeah, I think it's a great tool as well. And now that also makes sense. I remember when we were getting started with FirstBeat, the API was extremely important to you. Now I can completely see why, that if you have 50 other technologies, to have the data shoot directly somewhere and not have to manually do stuff, that makes a lot of sense here.
Oh, I had to mention, we use these API integrations via API a lot, and over 50% at least, or even more, our technologies, they have this API. And this is one of the criteria for us to select particular technology and start using this in the API. If technology has API, that's great. If technology can be integrated smoothly in our existing processes, yeah, it's awesome. We still have some local machines, obviously.
Yeah.
And on the particular niche, like medical field in the United States, yeah, obviously, those local tools are quite important. They still, a lot of people are still using it. However, it's limited around, you know, integrations. So yeah, that's kind of a challenging area. We still have the same approach. Let's automate what we can automate. Let's minimize human impact and human effort, and reduce load in terms of data collection, data processing, I would say even partially data analysis, and only involve our experts on the stage where they can bring their unique expertise, world-class, world-best expertise, in terms of data interpretation and building practical recommendations, practical solutions for our athletes, not like putting numbers on Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, I'm sure they appreciate, especially Friday, the feedback after that hard week of working and testing, that you've got some really good feedback they can benefit from. When they come, are they just all about business, or are some, you know, going to check out Vegas and see some of the sites during that time?
Oh, I'm pretty sure. Definitely.
You know, we do have to talk about stress management and recovery, right? So that's all part of it.
Exactly. Exactly. We often see, especially after fight week, yeah, a couple of weeks, I would say there is massive turbulence around their physiological metrics in relation to stress after fight week, not just during fight week, but actually. Two weeks after.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Exactly.
All right. If we flip it a little bit back to the science side. So talk about athlete feedback and how you mentioned the Friday meeting with everybody. How many are interested in their data, or is it very hard to kind of help educate them?
It's not hard. As soon as athletes see value, having this data, and I would say more important, information from us that has direct impact on their preparation process and their performance, they will be engaged and involved in this process a lot and significantly. So this is what we're trying to do. We're not just, you know, doing certain tests, for example, like energy system assessments, air bike with gas analyzer. When I complete this test, I spent about 5-10 minutes to provide immediate feedback first and actually show in graphs like oxygen consumption, CO2, curves, and so on, trying to connect their experience during this test with some data and information. And I always trying to connect their what is happening during fight, what is happening during training with those numbers, trying to involve and engage them. For example, hey, why we need to measure your VO2 peak or, you know, all of those thresholds, threshold one, threshold two, maybe VO2 peak and all other metrics, because you might be feeling during fight like tired too soon in first round. So it's not about your skills, it's about your physical capacity that can be improved during training. So an athlete, of course, they all experience that. So when they go all out in the very first round and they get tired, unable to recover in 1 minute for the next round, so they have already this experience, and I'm just trying to connect this data with their experience. And as soon as this connection is built, so they start being engaged and involved more, and they are looking for more information. They're asking more questions. So I would say they are pretty happy to sit with all of us on that Friday, what we call performance review meeting, listen key findings and find those potential limitations or deficiencies around their physical qualities and other factors and components, because we're not just highlighting those theoretically. We're capable to provide solution, how to fix, how to improve, how to develop those components, and it will lead to a higher performance. It can help them improve performance, improve health. So as soon as they start comprehends this message, our athletes, they're very much involved and they're looking for more information from us.
Oh, that's fascinating. And I think that's huge. You hit the nail on the head there when as soon as you can relate that data to their performance in the ring, instead of, hey, here's your VO2 max, and then they go, oh, is that good or bad? And now you're trying to explain, oh, well, average guy, this is that, and here's your number. No, this is how it relates to the fight. This is where we can improve it. That's great to hear that you've got such a good system that they can just buy in and understand it. And kind of on that same topic, I remember when I heard you speak a few years ago, I really liked how you spoke about everything has a cost, as in each training session has a cost, whether the cost of adaptation, the term that you used was biological money,
right?
Almost like a currency. I think the closest thing I've heard from the coaches I've worked with at First Beat is a trimp bank.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of the same idea, right? So this week, you know, if we've got 1,000 trimp points to work with, you know, we've got 5 days of practices, we don't want to go over this. Is that kind of like the same idea you're talking about as far as the biological money?
Yeah, exactly. Resources are limited. Nothing is coming from nowhere. Yet you have to have reserves available. You have to have resources available. You have to have energy available. Energy is not coming from nowhere, right? So for example, glycogen supposed to be stored in your muscles. And yes, you will be able to use that source to be able to deliver certain work. What is happening with our athletes, I would say, there is a certain paradigm still, like the more training load I do, the better. So which is not necessarily true, and even sometimes the opposite. So the more you do, the less benefits you will get, the faster you're going to spend your reserves, the faster you're going to spend your energy. And how are you going to build those adaptations if your bank is empty? You have to have, again, energy and sources available to build adaptations, to get training effect, positive training effect, without negative consequences, without negative factors. So therefore, this approach is, I would say, limited. And not just limited, but can be actually harmful and dangerous. And this is what we sometimes see with our athletes, it's not just about overreaching of what we're trying to produce, right? But it often go into overtraining, and athletes, they have experience like injuries coming, the illness, and they feel demotivated. There is no engagement anymore to do training. And so performance are decreasing, going down, and so on. So this, all of those consequences coming from improper or inaccurate training load management. It's like poison. Mm-hmm. Poison can be actually in little dosage okay for the, but if you will be using too much, you're gonna die. I don't want to create such a dramatic claim, but anyway.
Yeah. That makes sense. And I think, of course, being in Vegas is probably pretty easy for you to translate biological money, you know, okay, when you go out gambling, right? You know, if you burn right through it, or if you pace yourself, you know, you've got two choices.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So especially, you know, when athletes, they start in camp, training camp, they like, they go from nothing to everything. Mm-hmm. So like it was all camp phase. Some of them, they're not training much during that phase. And then, okay, this is first week of my training camp. I will do everything. and training load will be dramatically increased. Mm-hmm. And body is just unable physiologically to build those, you know, to adapt actually and build those adaptations. They spend reserves too much, too significantly. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I would say it's not efficient and could lead to more negative versus positive. And again, it's not just about always decreasing training load. No, if your body have resources available, you have to increase your training load, but do it progressively according to, I would say, physiological laws, physiological requirements, not just, oh, okay, let's do 5 training sessions a day, all the day, high intensity, highly glycolytic, and every day is like high intensity day, 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just, it's not going according to how our physiology works.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say I think they should be in good hands with so much tech to be able to give so much objective data. This is not my opinion. This is not your coach's opinion. This is what the data is showing us. So yeah, we go harder or we got to pull you back. Have you ever had like an athlete who showed up disappointing test results, didn't look like they're in very good shape, and then a few weeks later, just step in the octagon and just whip ass, just completely fight extremely well? Have you ever seen any kind of a surprise like that? Someone came in, you're like, this guy's not in shape, he's not going to do well, and then he just went out and performed in the octagon?
Great question, actually. So yes, because, you know, we're working with hundreds of athletes, and we see some exceptions on both sides. Exceptionally good, exceptionally, I would say, not ideal. there's a massive room for improvement.
That's a good way to put it. Not bad, just not ideal.
not ideal. However, again, this is sports science, right? We have to use scientific methods, scientific principles to evaluate, I would say, everything, and kind of critical thinking as well. So we compare all results from testing and diagnostics around physical qualities, as an example, or energy systems versus weight class. So, for example, if you fight in middleweight, okay, we got your ESD testing. We're going to compare this versus middleweight class. Mm-hmm. If we see your number, your metric, whatever it can be, workout put on air bike, VO2 peak or threshold 1, threshold 2, whatever, if it's below average for the versus weight class, we highlight this as a yellow flag or red flag.
Yeah.
Because average for us is like minimal requirement before camp.
Okay.
We're trying to find limitations.
Yep.
The most significant limitations. Let me use this analogy. So if you have an amazing car, whatever it can be, but your tire, little thing, your tire is not functioning properly, and that little thing, you cannot drive. Mm-hmm. So your engine might cost $300,000, but your a little thing just going to ruin all your experience and your car performance. So therefore, we structure and we build our testing diagnostics profiling in a certain way where we can identify the most significant limitations around your performance that can limit your performance in the octagon.
Okay, very interesting.
We're not focusing on your strengthness. We're focusing on your limitations. And our approach is, as soon as we see you're below average around certain KPIs, we say, hey, okay, this is what we need to improve. As an example, so your strength is significantly above average. You're probably close to maximal, but your energy system, as an example, aerobic system is significantly below average, and you're scheduled to fight five rounds. Hey, let's work on that component, because you have to be able to recover in 1 minute and deliver that high intensity pace, what we are planning across all 25 minutes, all five rounds, not just be completely expired in the very first round. So therefore, yes, sometimes athletes come into us, we do certain assessments, and we deliver to them key limitations, key deficiencies, what they have to work on. But again, it has no direct connection with their game plan, with their tactics, what they're planning to implement during fight, with their technical elements. So this is why we have to connect, ideally, everything what we do here in terms of testing, diagnostics, their physical preparation with their actual game plan, fight performance. Mm-hmm. Of course, when we're not, we will not help them to improve their technical skills. That's our fighters are independent contractors. They're working with different teams, coaches who help them to build this technique,
yeah,
tactics, game plan, and so on. But from our side, we want to make sure we help them and we're going to support them around their planet performance, making sure they're physically capable to deliver that desired outcome.
That is impressive. I'm kind of blown away right now about how well you guys kind of take care of these fighters. I mean, I understood you had some tech and stuff, but wow. And I also have to say, it's actually quite refreshing that you have had some that, came in, didn't look like they were going to do too well, and then surprised, because I know you've done a lot of research in your day too, that the best research studies in the world, you still have those one or two outliers that they really upset you. But at the same time, that's research. You're always going to have some here and there. So it seems kind of just fits the build. Sports science, there's your scientific part right there.
Yeah. We use here as our core tool, not just science, hashtag science, obviously. Let's put right here. But I would say scientific method and evidence-based approach. What that means, it sounds like it's boring. However, we're trying to remove guessing component from out of decision-making process, from decision-making. So our decisions around what to do is based on evidences, objective information, as well as expertise, both, actually. Mm-hmm. We are not just saying, hey, we have data and let's ignore your 20 years experience. No. We want to connect them. We want to use them both,
yeah,
as right tools that can help us to make even better decision versus hey, this is number, let's use number, or this is your experience and expertise, let's use it in isolation. No, we want to connect them and get the most informed decision what we can get. Doing testing, profiling, collecting data around their sleep, their recovery, their training load. We built infrastructure around our athletes in terms of using different technologies, mm-hmm, to be able to get at least minimal useful information around all components. As an example, yes, we do testing in facility. However, when they leave, we give them ordering sometimes first bit, mm-hmm, asking them, hey, can you please use this tool to track your sleep recovery? And we'll get that data. Let's use first bit for your technical and non-technical, actually, for both,
yeah,
training sessions. And we'll be able to understand your training load better. versus like just asking what's your RPE.
Yeah.
So RPE is definitely useful tool, but it's limited, as we all know. It's quite subjective versus subjective data. We created and built like certain environment around our athletes where we are trying to capture the most important components of their preparation and improve, adjust, optimize those components, making sure they can improve performance from one side, but they will be staying healthy from other side as well. And they will be also make weight on Thursday and demonstrate this on Friday, which is another type of competition, what they do during fight week.
I definitely agree with the much more simplistic way of what you said. You know, when I have coaches interested in the system, or a coach just won a national championship and they're buying First Beat and they're asking me, okay, what should I do with the numbers? What do I need to change? And I said, you just won a title. Don't change a thing. Do what you do. You'll have some objective numbers to show. But yeah, like you said, you know, the 20 years of experience, you don't just throw that out. Let's use that. Let's throw some numbers in and let's figure out this equation together.
Yep.
So if we get directed to some First Beat questions, kind of why did you choose to go with First Beat?
So first of all, I'm familiar with this company, I would say maybe close to 20 years.
All right, from the beginning. Yeah,
so from the beginning, yes, exactly. I think the first time I start using First Beat when I was working with professional boxers living in Moscow at that time in 2007, 2006 or seven, and it was Bodyguard.
Okay, yeah.
On that time, I recognized, oh, this product is truly based on science, which is, for me, it's very important.
Yeah.
It has very solid evidence-based approach in terms of building product around valid, reliable metrics. And I used the First Beat and Bodyguard as a scientific tool.
Yeah.
less in terms of practice, but more around, you know, applied science and kind of scientific research. That was my first experience. On that time, actually, it was maybe 2008. I started to use Bodyguard with several also professional athletes in different sports around their sleep. It was first time when we started tracking sleep. Yeah, it was over 15 years ago. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it was a great tool. The only thing athletes start complain, hey, it's difficult to sleep with something located on your chest.
Yeah, and electrodes and so it can bother the skin. Yep.
But anyway, I have to say it was a great tool. Yeah, I started working with a MegaWave later. And First Beat was always somewhere nearby me,
I would say,
across all of those years.
Yeah.
I have heard you guys built kind of new products, but still, you were following your kind of scientific approach. You always has been driven by data, objective data, validity, reliability, all of those scientific requirements that we have to have for every technology.
We've decided to err on the side of science and accuracy as opposed to being the kind of the next flashy thing.
Yeah.
Hey, 20 years later, we're still here. And luckily, people like you could see and appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting in a way. I guess, when was it, 2014 when I started? Like, I knew who you were in Omega Wave. I saw you as more of like a competitor, you know, to First Beat and that. So now it's nice that we're actually so-called on the same team now, on the First Beat team working together.
Yeah. For me, it's always first about value what science and particular product or technology can bring, and second about, you know, very secondary is business, money, and other things. So I saw all the time value what First Beat actually can bring to customers and athletes and coaches, and for me, I really appreciate that. So even working with a, you know, different company like MegaWave, who was like a competitor basically, but still, hey, your calculations, your HRV, your information, your what you provide to coaches, customers, your training load, related metrics, data export features, all of those, I saw like a valuable thing. Then, beginning of 2021, when they start developing new energy system tests for the MMA specific, sports specific ESD tests, I was looking for more in-depth data and information, not just like heart rate, but HRV at resting state, during exercise, after exercise, and kind of more information coming from heart rate monitor. Mm-hmm. And then in 2021, I think first time I got first big heart rate monitor, and I started using it. Actually, we went through evaluation of this product pretty comprehensively here in facility, mm-hmm. in terms of deciding what we have to use. Polar, first beat, or some other heart rate monitors, starting from hardware evaluation, even finalizing with software and ability to share raw data, web platform, what you guys can provide, mm-hmm. and so on. So like multiple criteria we developed. It's actually a pretty common process for us to evaluate different technologies because we do this all the time at API. And I found first beat, it was truly portable, smaller than other heart rate monitors. That's great. And for us, especially for MMA-specific training, like wrestling, striking, sparring sessions, the smaller sensor is, the better. It was light, portable, small. Yes, still, we found that we have to tape it with a heart rate belt with strap. Trying to keep it all the time during sports-specific activities. But it was actually good for female athletes because they use a bra, you know, all the time. So they cover that sensor and it is staying.
Yeah, that compression always helps for sure in the women versus the men.
Yeah. Second, accuracy. Surprisingly, I found accuracy of heart rate very high. higher than I was expecting.
Excellent. That's good to hear.
Yes.
Okay, good. Glad we had at least one surprise for you there in the positive way.
And HRV, I know it was always your thing. I did validation of your HRV calculations using different sources, other different independent technologies. And it was accurate as well. So accuracy, I was like very satisfied. And so, okay, we have good hardware. We have good accurate data now. And we're using your web platform, which is also pretty comprehensive. And I like it. It's pretty convenient. And there are multiple features available. So it's giving me a certain flexibility around data management. It has the API. It has integration. So kind of all of those criteria, basically, you passed.
Well, on that note, I was going to say, what are the kind of the metrics that you look at? So when we talk about training load and this, are you looking at the training effect, the anaerobic versus aerobic? You focused on TRIMP. What's your best number?
Yeah, I would say TRIMP. Okay. I'm looking for the most, and that kind of rolling training load metric on a scale on 1 month. Mm-hmm. TRIMP sum, this is important because that's the thing. It's not just about your acute load, but yeah, we want to track your chronic load, and especially, you know, which is important, 7 days and kind of rolling average metric. I don't track much aerobic and anaerobic type of work. I think it's more applicable for cyclic type of sports, maybe more kind of related to endurance. How sport is, mm-hmm. obviously has certain endurance component, but it's not as, you know, marathon or, you know, cycling or swimming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yours is what the total time is about 25 minutes of a fight, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's if it goes the entire scheduled time. So yeah, not an endurance sport for sure.
Yeah. This new recovery metric, I want to discover a little bit better what you just recently came in. Because recovering 1 minute for us is crucial. Your ability to recover in 1 minute and repeat high-intensity type of work multiple times. So it's as soon as we start talking about sustainability, your sustainability and being able to deliver multiple maximal efforts mm-hmm. like during fight. So we have to have this kind of information about your recovery. So we use that a lot.
Oh, that's perfect, because I was just going to actually ask you, have you had a chance to look at the new heart rate recovery feature? I'm glad that's so applicable for you guys. That makes sense. 25 minutes, you got your 1 minute break before to get back in. And yeah.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. We also use this during sparring sessions, if possible, with some athletes, because we are trying to minimize your heart rate during sparring session, making sure you will not be going to that high anaerobic glycolytic area too much.
Okay.
During practice, we're trying to minimize that, because especially with those guys who have a very high heart rate. So for example, the heart rate is functioning around like 90-95%, out of 100, obviously, but other systems, they are not really involved enough, like whatever it can be, local muscular oxygen consumption, or even ventilation and so on. So like other system functioning around 70% or even 60%, and your heart rate and cardiac function is around 90%. So we're trying to balance those physiological systems better and kind of create a proper balance, making sure all systems, they're functioning on the proper level without any significant deficiencies. We use that a lot. If we see an athlete is staying above anaerobic threshold or heart rate at anaerobic threshold too much, okay, let's work around your like local muscular adaptations and around your cardiac function, trying to minimize that cost coming from your pumping function.
Yeah. Have you noticed in any of those situations, how much of it do you think could be kind of related to psychological factors?
Yeah, a lot. It's always a question, not just how you manage your physiological readiness, but psychological as well. This is why we have actually, I forgot to mention, my bad, we have a psychology department here.
Okay.
And we have two experts who are working with our fighters, helping them improve psychological preparedness and readiness as well. So yes, it can be affected a lot, especially before fight, on the fight day. Actually, a whole fight week is pretty challenging around psychological component, because, so as an example, if you complete 8 weeks of training camp successfully, you can improve your HRV, sort of physical qualities, and everything is going well. You improve your performance, you improve your recovery ability, everything is great. And this is what I see often. So HRV week by week is going up little by little till fight week. During fight week, our fighters, they're communicating with media, they have to make weight, a lot of interviews, photo shoots, a lot of activities not related to actual training, but you know, related to their fight promotion.
A ton of external factors then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And including a lot of psychological factors. And HRV during that week is going dramatically down. And that's a common pattern.
Okay.
This is happening almost for everybody. And partially, it's okay. It's because, you know, your body is supposed to be mobilized before that fight day.
Yeah.
On Saturday, you have to be like a bit more excited, and that's okay. It's not a big problem. Question is, if you can still manage that during fight week adequately without overburdening yourself. Because you might spend too much during that fight week in terms of energy, in terms of your actual biological money. And you, on the fight day, you might be limited in terms of your reserves available. You might be overburdened. And it's always a question, what's your readiness on Saturday before actual fight, after going that fight week?
Yep.
So this is what we're called cost of the fight week.
Okay. You have the data to show it again. So you already know and you've established that pattern. So you can already say, okay, everybody's going to go through this. What are some of the things we might be able to do to help balance that out? That's really cool that you have that data. Last question I wanted to ask before we hop off. You're kind of in a very special position as far as you're a sports scientist and you're working in MMA, and there's not many positions available in that area compared to, you know, the sports scientists and the strength coaches. Normal pattern is to NCAA teams, college teams, professional teams there. What would you say to a young sports scientist who's interested in getting into the MMA world like you?
So first of all, use science as your primary tool for everything.
Okay.
Scientific method, critical thinking, challenge all status quo all the time, applying scientific method, and try to remove guessing and opinions and all beliefs. Use science as much as you can use in your career. So this is my first recommendation. So second recommendation will be, if you're planning to work as a sports scientist, so what actually sports science means? So who is that, you know, expert in sports science, specialist in sports science? So from my understanding, so sports science, what sports science does, develops and promotes evidence-based solutions for athletes, for coaches, for individual sport, for team sports, evidence-based solutions around how to improve performance, how to keep your body healthy, yeah? How to keep athletes' organism, body in a, still in a good state and prolong actually their career, even competing on the highest level possible, as well as how to avoid injuries, how to avoid all possible negative consequences from training, how to manage training load, how to build training program that will improve performance. So sports science is very well integrated discipline. It's like a hybrid that can help other areas, including nutrition, physical therapy, strength and conditioning, MMA coaches, to make better decisions around what to do, mm-hmm. around their training. And study always physiology. I know it's kind of a bit challenging area at the moment, and there are some sports scientists that have no classes completed around physiology, sports physiology. I have to say it's supposed to be mandatory. Sports science is not just data analysis. There is a data analysis field, the data science, that is a part of sports science, but sports science is not data science. So it's not just analyzing numbers, analyzing data. It's your ability to interpret this data, knowing methodology of training, knowing physiology, how our body works, how our body functioning. So connecting anatomy, physiology, biomechanics, bioenergetics, energy systems, or biochemistry, having skills around data science and actually engineering, sports engineering. So this all can help to be a good sports scientist, not just data, not just physiology, but a combination of all the most important disciplines, what I just mentioned.
Well said. I think that's some extremely valuable information right there for anyone trying to get into the industry. And what you said, there's still a lot of work to do. I know, I'm sure you're still always reading the latest papers. You're on PubMed, seeing what's coming out and what's new and staying up to date on everything.
Yeah, absolutely, Ben. Right. if there is a paradigm what I'm using, there is the only way you have to develop. You have to learn continuously. If you stop learning, if you stop developing, there is no plateau. It will be degradation and decline around intellectual or physical activity. So therefore, no options available. We all have to learn till end of our life.
Yeah, there's only one way forward. I like that. I agree.
Exactly. One way forward. No other options.
All right. Well, hey, Roman, I appreciate you taking the time today. I've really enjoyed this. I think there's a lot of really valuable information that our listeners are going to get from this. So thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Ben, for a great interview, great podcast. I really appreciate your great questions. And I was enjoying this as well. And thanks, everybody.
All right. If you like this episode and want to hear more like it, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the First Beat Sports Podcast. For more information about us and our sports monitoring systems, give us a call at 435-363-9533, or you can send us an email to sports@firstbeat.com. You can also visit us online at www.firstbeat.com. Thanks a lot for listening today, and don't forget to be with us on the next edition of the First Beat Sports Podcast.